Okay, Mr. Harris, item number 8, Vision for the Future.
So what I wanted to do with this item, and this kind of leads into Michael's item, I wanted to talk about big initiatives versus the kind of everyday work that we do. We do a lot of permitting activities and permits and inspections and things like that. And from the state board's perspective and performance measures, that's what they like to see, and that's what we get graded on. But it seems, you know, coming from Sacramento, I tend to look at things on a much wider, larger scale, and I see a lot of big issues in the region that I think we should be thinking about. And it kind of goes back to your comment about are we bringing less to you in terms of board meetings? And I think, you know, and of course what I'm saying is really for you folks to discuss when I'm done, but I wonder sometimes if we shouldn't use the board in a more proactive way in terms of setting aside, like we are for March 6th, the workshops where we spend the day talking about very specific issues and bringing different stakeholders in to listen to their concerns and trying to figure out how we can move forward on some of these issues. Because it does seem, and I'll give you a number of examples, it does seem like at least the local level, there are a lot of things stuck that aren't getting resolved because of local politics, for example. And I think that we could, if the board is so inclined, could play a much bigger role in trying to facilitate both through our regulatory process, but also by organizing workshops and trying to get the different parties to the table and trying to work out their differences so that they can and we can move forward to solve some of the big problems. It seems like we get lost, I think, in the weeds of our individual, you know, our actions, our day-to-day work, and we talk about the big picture, but I think it's something that we have to continuously bring up. I was looking at the last year's offsite and the discussion about healthy watersheds, and I think that's on the right track. But I think we have to remind ourselves continuously about how do we get there, and I'm not sure that permit by permit is the way to do that. So what I wanted to do was I just want to go through those five. Actually, I added a sixth one, climate change items, and talk a little bit about what we're doing now, or what we could do, and afterwards just, you know, ask the board to give us some thought. One of the things about going after some of these big issues is it does run directly into conflict in terms of how we use our resources. And if the board chooses to move in that direction, it means that our performance measures might end up taking a hit, for example, because staff is spending time working on big problems and not individual items. So that's certainly a change in course in the manner in which we do, and I can guarantee you Sacramento will have something to say about it. And during the break, I was talking to Mr. Johnson, and he said, well, maybe that's an issue that needs to be brought up at WQCC in terms of should we be solving big problems or are you going to hold us to these widgets? Unfortunately, of course, the WQCC agenda is already set, but it may be something that we tee up for the next one in the following year. So under healthy watersheds, there was one that was preventing and correcting threats to human health, and that's really targeted at nitrate contamination in our groundwater basins. So I think in that we already have a good effort underway, and there's both, and with all of these, we should be striving, I think, for short-term successes, and then many of these problems are going to be long-term in terms of trying to ultimately solve them. And so we should strive for both short-term and long-term successes. So on the nitrate issue, through our ag order and through the co-ops and the work that's being done, the results are now coming in. So I would say that's a short-term action that we're taking, and I think we'll have some short-term successes. And certainly within this next year, we'll have a lot of data coming in, so we'll have a much better idea of what the situation is. And, of course, that's going to beg the question, once we have the data, how are we going to ensure that people have safe water. And but that's still to come. But that's a short term. And then, of course, long term is probably many ag orders or WDRs into the future in terms of trying to minimize inputs to of nitrates to groundwater. But that's a problem that's going to take decades to solve. But we are working on that. Preventing and correcting degradation of aquatic habitat. And this one I really want to focus on the Salinas River, but Mr. Johnson brought up the Pajaro. So we have a number of rivers that are no longer, they're not natural rivers any longer. The Salinas is not natural. It never will be natural again. It's dammed. And if you look at the river, you can see the overgrowth that's caused by man's interference. But I think we can certainly strive for a healthier river than we currently have. It may never be natural, but we certainly can strive for a healthier river. And as far as short-term actions and long-term, I think you all know that the Monterey County Water Resource Agency is the responsible agency for trying to maintain the river. The challenges they have, of course, are that they don't have any kind of ownership to the river. That's all privately owned. And a couple weeks ago, they took their EIR, which would have, if adopted and passed and approved by the agencies, would allow them to go in and do maintenance. And it was tabled because the ag interests and the environmental interests didn't like it for various reasons. So they're now struggling, trying to figure out how to move forward in terms of maintenance. And I met with the general manager and his staff on Monday to talk about the issue and to talk about our proposed or now adopted and our March 6th workshop that we're going to have. They're very pleased that we're going to do that. They welcome our involvement in it, and they felt that the timing was helpful. So they really would like, I think, some assistance from us in trying to facilitate some sort of long-term management strategy for the Salinas that takes into account all of the interested parties, whether it's federal agencies like the fisheries or whether it's us and our requirements under a 401 cert, the environmental community and the growers. I mean, someplace we all have to meet and come to some sort of agreement. It's much like what happened at the State Board. There's got to be some level of compromise. But I think we can, as an agency, play a leading role in helping to fashion that, fashion such an agreement. But for maintenance of the river, there's a couple of things we need. We need short-term action and long-term action. Short-term is trying to figure out how we can allow them to do some maintenance in the near term while we develop the long-term management strategy. The current year is basically lost, this current rainy season, so let's hope that if it rains a lot, it's a nice mellow rain and we don't get floods. One of the comments they made, which sort of brought the practical aspect to my attention, was there were 13 bridges that either cross the Salinas or cross tributaries to the Salinas, and because of the overgrowth, there is a potential threat to the structural stability of those bridges. And of course, you know, I drive back and forth every week, and so I cross three main bridges: one at Soledad, one north of King City, and one south of King City. And I thought about our responsibility in the context of what would happen if we had a major event and because of a lack of maintenance in the stream, we lost one of those bridges. And people start to point fingers at all the agencies involved who have failed to work together. And I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, but have failed to work together to ensure that appropriate maintenance can occur so that basic infrastructure is protected. And that's kind of the short-term action that I think we've got to figure out in the next year or so. And then long-term, again, is some sort of long-term agreement so that we maintain, we have flood protection, that we have protection of riparian habitat, that endangered species are accounted for, and at the same time we improve water quality. I mean, there's a lot to try to provide for an agreement, but I think we can do that. It's just a matter of getting the right people in the room and everyone willing to work together. Under the third one is prevention degradation of hydrologic processes. I think here's another place where we already have a program in place, the Phase 2 permit and the LID initiative. The State Board adopted the Phase 2. You all readopted the resolution for the LID. Staff is working very hard in the short term to make sure that the Phase 2 communities are updating their ordinances. And long term, it's really us monitoring the Phase 2 communities and working with them to ensure that they implement the program so that as they grow, they retain as much water on site, they recharge the groundwater basins. So there we already have, I think, a good program in place and we're making progress on. Preventing and reversing seawater intrusion. There's a couple of, we have that problem up and down the coast, Soquel Creek watershed, of course along the Monterey, directly around Monterey and Seaside, Los Osos, and to a lesser extent, Santa Maria and some of the other basins. And I think here's another place where I think we could take and be more actively involved. One way we're doing that is when I spoke at Aqua a couple of weeks ago, I was talking with the city with the manager of the regional wastewater treatment plant, and they're very much on board in terms of trying to find an agreement with the city of Salinas. The city of Salinas currently has a number of ponds, including some emergency overflow ponds for their processed wash water that they use in a lot of their food processing facilities that's going into ponds. And the city of regional wastewater treatment plant would like to be able to take that water and move it to the wastewater treatment plant, run it through their tertiary process, and then push it out to either the growers in the Castroville area or actually direct injection along the coast to form a seawater barrier. The problem is there are some local issues. Part of it is money in terms of putting the infrastructure in place to get that water out to the wastewater treatment plant. The city of Salinas has asked us for permission to continue using those emergency ponds, and we're going to be sending them a letter that says we'll let you use those ponds for a number of years, but it's going to be limited term, and our expectation is that you're going to work with wastewater treatment plant and other locals to find a more permanent solution, use of that water, running it through the recycled process. Long term, we do have Lisa McCann is now our regional water rights liaison to the State Board Division of Water Rights. I've had a number of conversations with Barbara Evoy, and she said, "Why don't we appoint one of your staff to be a liaison to us?" And Lisa volunteered to do that. So Lisa already has her first project in terms of saltwater intrusion. And Lisa's going to be working with the Soquel Creek Water District, the City of Santa Cruz, and Scotts Valley. The desal plant for Santa Cruz has come to a halt, and partly it has to do, again, with local politics, local water transfers. And I met the lady, her name is Kim, I forget her last name, who runs the Soquel Creek watershed. She's been there about 2 months, and she comes from Washington State. And at Aqua, she was she said, "I can't believe how difficult it is to get anything done here in California compared to Washington." She said, "We can't even transfer water between water districts," and she's correct. It's place of use, place of diversion. It's all tied up in water rights, and it can be a very difficult process to modify. I spoke with Division of Water Rights, actually with Vicki Whitney, and Vicki gave me some ideas. So Lisa's now going to take that and work with those three entities and work with the Division of Water Rights in Sacramento to see if she can't help to facilitate either the creation of a single water district or transfer of water among those three. An example is the city of Santa Cruz doesn't recycle water right now because they said, "Well, we don't have a use for recycled water." But Scotts Valley would like our recycled water if we produced it, and then they in turn would give us some of their water. Well, that involves transfer of water, and so right now they can't do it. And it it seems like kind of a crazy thing. It is the law, and we do have to work within it, but it is impeding local districts' ability to actively move water around to satisfy their needs, and that is part of what's holding up the desal plant. Protection of groundwater basins. I want to talk about overdraft first. I think the board is very aware of what's happening in Paso Robles, and typically the regional boards don't get involved in water supply or adjudicatory processes. The state board, though, is looking more and more towards regional boards having a role to play. That's one reason why Lisa's got her new title. And I think the recent letter from Mr. Howard to the Board of Supervisors is a good example of how we can influence local politics, where originally I think there was questions on whether or not the initial ordinance was going to be adopted or not. And I do believe, and I think Mr. Wolf, Vice Chair Wolf, would agree that the letter from Mr. Howard did play a role in getting that adopted the first time around. And it did seem to open up lines of communication between Sacramento and the locals. And there's been quite a bit of correspondence between the locals and Sacramento. And recently the governor last week appointed a fifth supervisor to the Board of Supervisors, a lady from, I believe it's Arroyo Grande, which will change the voting dynamics on the board, because the a week or so ago when the emergency ordinance came up for a vote to extend it out 2 years, it failed because of one vote, which actually was quite surprising, because Lisa and I had gone previously to the Blue Ribbon Committee meeting in Paso Robles, where all the parties were present, and we understood from the conversation that they would all be recommending that they approve the 2 years. So I think we do have a role to play, and one thing that's possible that might come out of this, if the locals cannot solve the problem, my understanding, listening to a number of people, is that it's likely there could be lawsuits, and it's likely that when it goes to court, it's very likely that it could be referred to the state board for adjudication, and in that case, the state board would be looking to us to assist them as far as providing staff on a team for the field work that has to be done in preparation for the adjudication. So that would certainly impact our limited resources, but it's a commitment that the board, of course, I think we would come to you and make sure that you're comfortable with it. And but I do think that those are the kinds of big picture groundwater issues that we need to be tackling in the region. Related is salt and nutrient management plan. You recall with the water board's recycled water policy, there was a requirement for local groundwater districts, agencies overlying those, to develop salt and nutrient management plans. And there was a 2014 deadline for those to be considered by each regional board. We've had mixed success. The cities, for the most part, have been working very hard. The area where we've had difficulty is engaging ag, and so really that's a more long-term problem that we are going to have to work on. I don't think that we're going to have a whole lot for Sacramento in 2014, and we're putting together a small report right now that we can share with you in the future about the successes and the failures that we're having in terms of trying to get these basins covered by salt nutrient management plans. Long term, staff and I have already talked about that with the next ag order, that will be a requirement in the ag order, is to encourage or to require that the ag communities participate. Some of that already will occur through fertilizer management, but we want to make sure that they're at the table with the cities, and because the cities are a small input into the basin, it's really ag has a much larger role to play. And the last one I wanted to mention was was adaptation to climate change. We have our most recent example would be the denial by the Coastal Commission of Morro Bay's permit to rehab their facility in its current location. Reason cited by the Coastal Commission was the them being in a hazard zone and subject to, you know, sea level rise, flooding, tsunamis, et cetera. And I think that's an area where this board should actively engage the wastewater treatment plants or other infrastructure that we permit. As it comes before the board, we should be having that discussion about whether the current location, for example, is appropriate given the trend that we're seeing. And, of course, the most recent report, I think, Mr. Chair, you're aware of, that came out of the UN a couple of weeks ago in regards to climate change and what we might expect. It doesn't make sense to me to be re-permitting facilities in their location if that location is going to be subject to or could be subject to flooding or sea level rise, that we should be encouraging them or requiring them in some manner consistent with our regulatory authority to start making plans to move those facilities or account for any impact from sea level rise. I think we owe it to future generations to make sure that we're thinking about that. I mean, I think the timeline on that is 50 years or so, but we certainly should be thinking about it.
How many such facilities do we have in the Central Coast region?
You know, I don't know, and that's something I don't know if staff does or not, but I would think Oceana is one because it's right down there on the beach. Pismo, Morro Bay is already that's going to be taken care of. So I don't know. Oh, we would have to look at that.
Santa Barbara, too.
We have 32 individual MPDS permits, and I'd say about 10 of them are for inland surface waters, and the remainder are all ocean discharges. So about 20, at least 20.
But of the ocean discharges, are they all so low in elevation that they would be subject to climate change impacts?
You know, we haven't even done that kind of an evaluation. I think Morro Bay is one of the first ones to do that.
Even some of the inland the ones that discharge to inland surface waters, I know Watsonville, for example, discharges to the Pajaro River about, a mile upstream from the ocean. But the area it discharges to is actually subject to tidal influence, flows both ways. So it's effectively not very far inland.
And that's a new plant, isn't it? Relatively new plant?
It's a plant they've done a bunch of expansion on. I'm not sure when they cited it.
That's the one we visited
that's
part of the Strawberry.
Thought.
Yeah,
right,
it looks relatively new.
Mm. Right. You got to visit that?
Yeah. Mm. So bringing this up, there are a lot of areas, as I said, that I think we can play a role, and these are some big projects that will take time and staff resources. But that's in conflict with the way we normally budget and the way Sacramento budgets. But I think working on some of those will in the long term pay some big dividends, and in fact will help free up resources. So you know, if we can solve the Salinas River channel maintenance issue. Hopefully Phil and his staff won't be spending as much time as they do on trying to permit these on an every 5-year basis, that the permitting would be a much more routine process, much like they do in San Francisco Bay with their dredging activities, and they have a similar type of agreement up there. So I would just ask that the board kind of think about that and, whether working on those kinds of projects is where you would be willing to allow staff to work, or are you more concerned about individual permits? And as you'll see in Michael's discussion, there are a lot of, when the line's drawn given to what we do, there's a lot of permits and things that we don't routinely, low-risk kinds of things that we don't routinely work on because we need to work on the larger, higher risk permits or facilities.
Can you comment a little bit more on backing up to item 4 on this list? the seawater intrusion. Can you talk to where we're at with the Los Osos ISJ process and the management plan?
Yeah, so, and I'll ask Harvey to help out a little bit on that. So the Harvey and staff have been looking at the management plan, and I think in general they think that it's a well-written document. We are going to provide some written comments. There was an October 4th, we thought, deadline, but our understanding is that's not a hard deadline. So I think at this point I'll ask Harvey to comment on Los Osos.
Right. So maybe news that there is a management plan. It's been out since about August 1st. It's big, over 300 pages. Talks a lot about the basin, current conditions, and how things got to where they are. And then it talks a lot about management practices and things that the parties would like to do to reverse, or at least halt and reverse, the seawater intrusion. So it's a joint project among the three water purveyors in Los Osos and the county, so four parties, they call them. They've combined to produce this document. And we are reviewing it, and we'll have some comments back to the parties. We plan in December, at the December board meeting, to talk about it in a little more depth, along with the status of the Los Osos project in general. But they are in overdraft. They're using more water. It's a combination of using more water than available and using it in locations that aren't optimal. So their management practices, including reducing pumping and changing where they pump to lessen the impacts on seawater intrusion. That's the gist of it.
Do you have a sense, Harvey, as to when their management practices or usage practices are going to actually start changing?
I don't remember off the top of my head exactly what their goals are. They do. One of the interesting parts about the plan is they do have specific goals that they want to see, specific measurements that they're going to use to gauge their success with the goals. So they're going to measure things like water levels in certain wells, nitrate values in certain wells, salt levels in certain wells, and they'll be able to gauge that versus the goals as they go forward. I did see a date of 30 years that they expected to see nitrate 30 years past the implementation of the wastewater treatment plan is when they expected to see nitrate values in the upper aquifer reaching drinking water levels. And you think 30 years, that seems like a long time. That was my first impression. But then I realized that it had been 30 years since the board adopted a prohibition in Los Osos. And so things do, in geologic time, I guess, that's not very long. And we're talking about a geologic structure like a groundwater basin. So they are intent on reversing the seawater intrusion fairly quickly.
Mr. Why? Chair?
Yes. Dr. Wolf.
I've got a question, Harvey. I thought that the county was to test wells this year for salt water. And I think, considering we're on a serious drought situation, intuitively, I would think that things didn't get better groundwater-wise. You know, if we just take the example of what's happening in other parts of the county, you know, Cambria's having big problem, Paso, even some of the Sentinel wells in Pismo. So, I mean, I'm a little concerned that if we get a plan, it's like, yeah, we'll test the wells and, you know, maybe next year or the year after. I think there is a need to test these wells now, mm-hmm. and see where these fingers have been extended. That's first part. Second part, if we take the success story of what the Blue Ribbon Committee did in Paso, they had a problem in getting enough wells that they could use as samples because the wells that they had access to were municipal wells. So they asked for residents if there was any volunteers who would allow the well data to be taken in exchange for maintaining strict confidentiality of the information. And they ended up with 70 volunteers. And that has helped them in the most recent map, really identifying a lot better where the problems were. So if in Los Osos, you know, some of the concern are, well, we don't have, you know, adequate amount of wells for the data, you know, maybe this is another approach to consider as well.
Yeah. The management plan does identify specific wells that will be monitored, and they have been monitored and will be continued and will continue to be monitored. It's part of the permit that this board issued for the wastewater treatment plant. The CSD, well, I guess the county, is required to monitor certain wells. And so that's ongoing and has been for a while. The management plan includes those wells and other wells, but for gauging their key metrics, they call them, there's a set number of wells that are identified, and that monitoring is ongoing.
Do you have that information?
It's in the management plan. I don't have it with me at the moment, no. But it's readily available. In a lot of ways, Los Osos is ahead of Paso Robles. This management plan is a huge step, I think, in studying the problem and proposing solutions. It's not a full adjudication of the basin, but it's a step in the direction of adjudication. For instance, it doesn't require any actions of individual well owners, but it does take the four main parties and requires their cooperation and participation and financial resources in coming up with practices to solve the problem.
From a recycled water standpoint, you know, I totally agree with you that Los Osos is ahead of Paso, because the Paso Water Treatment Plant, right now they're planning on the year 2020 before they will have a recycled water system. And in the meantime, the discharge on a daily basis is going to be 15 million gallons, i.e. 5 acre feet per day. So they're a long ways from even considering recycled water. Meanwhile, that groundwater basin is distressed.
So who do the comments go back to?
We'll be submitting them to the parties.
The parties. So
the four.
And does the judge review any of this? And then
it's not clear. Yeah.
Do you know what happens, Jessica?
No.
Okay. How does it get enforced?
It's an agreement among, well, it's a proposed agreement among the four parties, and I'm imagining there's a legal process where a judge approves the plan and tells the parties to implement it. That's true. It does have it talks about appointing a water master. I talked to one of the geologists who helped develop the plan, and he's not sure who that would be. You know, I'm hoping that it's an independent third party, not associated with any of the parties, that would have some authority to make sure that not one or, you know, that it's the plan is adhered to and that the parties don't have undue influence on that process. That'll be in our comments.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Go ahead, Ken.
No, I was just going to ask the board their thoughts on using staff for some of these initiatives versus, you know, dealing with our widget count and the.
Any board comments? Mr. Johnston.
I mean, at first blush, it sounds like it makes total sense to focus on the big problems rather than the widgets, but I want to understand a little better what the trade-off is and what the widgets are that we are not focusing on.
Well, in some cases, some of these projects tie directly into, you know, our normal activities anyway. So, for example, 401 certification of maintenance of the Salinas River. It's just taking it a step further so that we end up with a much bigger solution as opposed to these incremental solutions that or these piecemeal kind of solutions to some of these big problems. I haven't done an analysis, and I would have to sit down and think about assignments and who's doing what. For example, you know, Lisa's work with Soquel, I mean, that's certainly going to impact her to some degree. I don't know how much time that's going to take. I don't anticipate it will take a lot of her time, but I think the value added that she's going to add to that area in terms of helping them work with the state board is going to be tremendously helpful.
To what?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I can give you an example if you'd like. The way the process works now with at least some of the performance measures is that state board asks us prior to the beginning of the fiscal year to tell them what our plans are for performance measures for specific programs. So, for instance, for the program that issues waste discharge requirements, they want to know how many orders will be up for review in this coming year, how many we will review, and that's one measure. And the second measure is how many inspections will we perform on those plants. So two measurements for that particular program. And what we did in the last spreadsheet is we told the state board that this year we would do fewer reviews and fewer inspections because we would be spending more time on salt and nutrient management planning. And they don't have a problem with that necessarily, as long as we tell them up front, and then our performance measures for that year are fewer than what they had been in the past.
So when you're referring to widgets, Ken, is this basically the performance-based management system that we've heard a lot about?
Well, it's what they're counting. So like Harvey was saying, you know, permit reviews or updates, it's more of a problem, for example, with widgets we owe US EPA. EPA is much less inclined to be willing to let us do other things than do our major inspections, for example, or complete complete a certain number of TMDLs, because they in turn have to take our performance, roll it into their regional performance, and then send that back to Washington, D.C. So they tend to be, when regions have in the past tried to modify the number of inspections or whatever it is, permit renewals, EPA gets a little testy about that.
So what are the, I mean, as a policy question, I have no trouble at all with the concept of finding ways to prioritize what we're going to focus on in the ministerial stuff we do, kind of like we're trying to do as we take on the challenge of regulating 3,000 farmers' discharges to groundwater. We're trying to set up some stuff that will allow us, both through the tiering system and through the reporting, to identify outliers we can focus on. I have no problem with doing that and trying to free up tight resources to do, quote, big picture stuff. You mentioned the Salinas River as an example. Certainly the wildly political struggle going on around Soquel Creek Water District, Santa Cruz City, DeSal, all that. It's useful to bring, you know, an element of you know, objective stuff to it. What are the obstacles to that? You mentioned the EPA, which is sort of beyond our ability to influence much, I assume. We can argue with them. And you mentioned the state board, which I think is probably closer to us having an ability to influence them. Can I understand that a little better?
Well, I think it's mainly making sure that you all, because it's not only a matter of redirecting staff in some cases, but it's also committing your time, because you're gonna, for example, March 6th, you're going to be in Salinas, and you're going to have all these parties making presentations to you and looking to you possibly to help find a solution to this long-term issue of channel maintenance. So One, it's partly redirecting staff. Partly it's your willingness to engage in what can be, you know, very political, messy kind of topics and trying to push locals to find solutions.
I think those are the funnest topics, but I think it's also partly, well, I mean, I think of stuff we've spent time on in the last few meetings. There was a, there's a couple that come to mind. One was a little winery permit where that was up for, wasn't even renewal. I think it was, this was at the Santa Barbara meeting. It was going into the, to the general winery waiver because it was an old permit. And, you know, some numbers didn't seem to make sense, and we sent it back to the staff, which brought it back to the board again. There was another one regarding, it was an ice operation in Salinas, one of the packing houses, that there was a number that didn't make sense, and we sent it back, and it came back around. So I think it's kind of irresistible as a board member not to ask those questions when I see those things and not to focus on the minutia. But it probably at least part of it is us as well being willing to focus more on the overarching structural stuff than the minutia. I personally think that's a productive direction for us to focus in.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Wolf.
Thank you. Let's see. Back to your presentation, Ken, we've talked about the Salinas River and the fact it'll never be the same. You know, I agree with you. However, I think if we take the example of the LA River, which is really a LA canal, there's been a tremendous amount of success stories recently in some sections. So I think there's some, you know, there's some hope there. Now, getting back to the issue of minutias or widgets, I think some of this gets back to the old management rule, the 80-20 rule. And I see that 20% of the issues we deal with represent over 80% of criticalities in terms of, you know, environmental impacts and importance. But I don't think we should necessarily sacrifice the smaller items because they're all important and they all do add up. So it's perhaps an issue of working smarter rather than working harder. And a couple of examples, I think, where we could make some improvements is, I think, with a better utilization of GeoTrack, we can, for example, get our reporting more streamlined. Using the example of wineries, wineries right now provide the data, basically hard copies. You got to take that, you got to re-enter it somehow. I'm not sure how you do it, but it certainly is not an automatic system. So if we take the example of the ag order, where it's online data entries, and using this with all other types of permits, you know, getting the help from Sacramento, I think we were supposed to get some software assistance or programmer assistance, if I recall, and investing in more automation of online inputting of information. That's going to help things. And I think in terms of, you know, the small things, we're doing better, but I think ourselves, we need to look at ourselves in the mirror and become more disciplined as a board of not taking little items and just nitpick them to the end. And you know, I think we're doing better now, but I recall meetings where it was questions after questions after questions. And, you know, next thing, we burned 2 hours on one teeny little item. So I think we ourselves, you know, can do a better job. And I would say in the last 6 months, I think we're doing that. But, you know, I will confess with all of you that In recent meetings, I had kept track of each of us and the number of questions that we would ask. And I have kept that. And without going to each and every one of us, but some of us do tend to represent 80% of the questions. So I think we, you know, this is the time when we need to look at ourselves as well. And I think as a board, we can, you know, do a little bit of a better job to in restraining ourselves sometime or come better prepared. So when we have these briefings, which, by the way, I think are very, very valuable, that's a great, great tool, you know, that we ask our questions as much as possible during briefing, and that would then allow us more effective use of our time, pardon me, during the meeting. And I want to thank you, Jeff, because I think you have in recent months really helped corral us a little bit better in controlling our own time management. So thanks.
Well, that's because everyone chimed in, or some more than others, that they wanted to streamline things, and that's why I did it. But I think what I'm hearing Ken saying is that he would like some concurrence from the board on this kind of a change in strategy to utilize staff's time more for big ticket items and maybe dropping some of the smaller items that he's calling widgets.
Well, I think, you know, Jean-Pierre, I think, did a good job of getting the board to focus less on these smaller routine things that typically, and maybe we need to do a better job of helping you understand what's the potential environmental impact, negative or positive, of the action we're asking you to take. Because a lot of these routine things we bring before you, they need to be permitted. The law says they need to be permitted, but from an environmental standpoint, compared to some other issues, they aren't a huge threat to water quality, for example. And I think we could do a better job of helping you understand that so that then we can spend more time on some of the bigger issues and bigger discussions.
But you're asking us of something right now.
Yes.
Okay. And that is?
In general, is the concept of the staff and the board engaging in trying to work on some of these bigger issues, consciously working on these bigger issues, not permit by permit, is that something you're interested in working on? Now, you're already committed to one, and that's Salinas. So we've already got a pilot in the works, and that's going to be the workshop on March 6th.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. I would like to know, like some of the others, what is it that we're not going to be engaging in? That's all.
And I'm not sure I can answer that today.
Okay.
But Michael's got some good slides, and you know, I think that may kind of help explain some of the, you know, where we're drawing the line on some of the things that we are and aren't working on. And I agree with maybe in a different way with Dr. Wolf, is that working smarter in terms of and maybe staff is doing this and I'm not aware of it, but even from my own understanding, thinking about the watersheds and the activities that are going on and how those activities all connect to one another in terms of the impacts to the watersheds. The state board and regional boards have talked about this for years, is we should be working on a watershed basis and we should permit on a watershed basis, et cetera. But it does seem like we have all struggled to make that happen because of all these other drivers in terms of when permits come up for renewal, when they, you know, they don't all line up in a watershed, for example. So there are some real world challenges to trying to make that happen. And that may be something we just need to have a renewed effort to try to put everything in a watershed and try to figure out how to work on those as a, you know, in a coherent fashion.
Mm. Not to put you on the spot, Ken. would any senior staff have any kind of pieces of the puzzle here in terms of maybe what are the things we might be shifting some attention away from to to work on big items.
Phil volunteered.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, since we were talking about the Salinas River issue, and that's in my unit, I could talk a little bit about what the trade-off would be in my unit.
Good.
Basically, the Salinas River project is essentially a 401 water quality certification. And so the trade-off would be the more time we spend on that bigger issue and trying to resolve it long-term, it would be a trade-off doing other work in the 401 program. Mm. And so right now, we get more 401 applications in our office than staff can actually dig into and look at and review in a detailed manner. And we draw a line, and the projects below that level we assign to a student to work on. And these are very, you know, these are minor projects where we've made the determination that they don't pose a real threat to beneficial uses in water quality and watershed health. If we were to spend more time on the Salinas, that bar would be raised, and we would probably review some of these other 401 projects in a similar manner, basically rubber stamping them. And some of those may have more of a potential to impact watershed health. And where that line would be drawn would be depend on how much time it takes to manage the Salinas River issue.
Okay. What about other sections? Like, I know the WDRs, they're not automatically renewed, right? Some of them we see after 10 years or 15 years.
Right. And, you know, when Dr. Wolf mentioned GeoTracker, and Chris can probably help me on this, is we have a data system for the NPDES permit, so CWICS, and UST goes into GeoTracker, and the Ag program is in GeoTracker. But WDRs routinely have not, and there was a pilot done in Los Angeles to put all the WDR permits into GeoTracker, and I don't know the status, so maybe John or Chris can talk about that, but that's an area where I think if that is fulfilled and everything goes into GeoTracker, it's another big program that gets automated and would certainly, I would hope, lessen the workload on staff.
And is that what you're thinking of in terms of trade-offs?
You know, no,
being able to be more efficient there.
Yes.
And being able then to shift staff resources to big picture.
Right, exactly.
Items. Okay.
So, Chris, do you know the status of that?
The pilot project in Region 4 was a huge success, and there has always been I don't know if it's just state board centric, whether there's this turf war between CWICS, which is the system that we use for WDRs, and GeoTracker. CWICS is a terribly cumbersome system. What I understand is that we're trying to roll out that pilot project into WDRs and put WDRs into GeoTracker throughout the state. There's some resistance because CWICS has its backers. I'm not sure where it stands at the moment, but I'm certainly a fan of GeoTracker, and I know that the WDR program would benefit tremendously by switching databases. When we could just use it. It's easier to use. And I think we could save time, and I think to Ken's point and to Dr. Wolf's point that's just working smarter. I mean, it's making better use of our resources.
Mm-hmm. So Chris is correct. There are internal factions. I'm going to try and be politically correct and polite within state board, and it's not a technology limitation. It's really it's an organizational issue of trying just to make that decision of committing to moving the WDRs into GeoTracker and not into CWICS.
Have you weighed in on that?
Not sure I want to. this was going on. I didn't really have a role to play. This was going on because I didn't oversee the WD, DR program in Sacramento at the end. And so this has been playing out over the last couple of years, so I really have not had a role or a discussion in that.
Right, but now you're the EO of this region.
Well, I haven't.
Clearly there's a benefit to what has just been described to us as a shift.
Right, and I guess I really haven't given it a lot of thought, okay. And it really hasn't, as far as I know, and I don't know if it's come up at the WDR roundtable or not. It hasn't come up at MCC, and it hasn't come up on the 4 o'clock Monday calls. So it's mm-hmm. I haven't heard much about it recently.
So it has been discussed at the program level.
John, can you use the mic?
It has been discussed at the program level, WDR program, as well as outside of the. There's a faction or a component at State Board that manages GeoTracker, and they floated the idea in test balloon to several of the groundwater section managers throughout the state. When that came to me, I was very supportive of the concept. GeoTracker needs to be viewed as sort of the data platform for all groundwater. And so all the groundwater programs need to feed their data into that. And the WDR program is one of those programs. It makes no sense to shop in two data sources for your groundwater information, both from the public standpoint and from our business model, too. It just makes no sense. And then Chris Adair alluded to the fact that CWICS is difficult for the user. It's very cumbersome for the user. GeoTracker is not. There's a learning curve associated with it, and we see this with every program that moves in. The staff struggle initially because it's a new case management tool. But Tanks is a great example of they are so cultured to GeoTracker now that if something happens, a blip happens, GeoTracker becomes unavailable. There's a ruckus raised in the organization because they can't do their – they become dependent to do their casework. GeoTracker. So it's very adaptable. The programmers are great. GeoTracker.
I mean, with this, is there anything for the board to do to help?
Can we sign a petition?
You know, I'd have to look at the WQCC agenda to see if there's an opportunity to raise it as an issue. It might be something to ask just for a status report on.
Okay.
You guys meet
monthly,
right? I can check into it and just ask what the make a phone call and ask where we are on it, report back to you.
Can I ask the other section leaders if they have anything else they could add in terms of trade-offs that they see, kind of like what Phil shared with us? Can you give us some examples of small ticket items that we might be able to put on the back burner while staff can focus on bigger things?
When Phil spoke up, I thought he was going to talk about the stormwater program and the way they've already reduced the construction and industrial site inspections significantly in the last couple of years in order to be able to more effectively audit the municipal permittees. And I also wanted to mention that this information that we're talking about now is a lot of what is in the next item. So I just wanted to raise your awareness about that because the example I just mentioned is really well graphically laid out for you in the item that Michael was going to present. And so maybe we could loop back around to this, finish this conversation too at the end of that one.
Okay. I think it'd be a good idea.
You have anything to add, John?
I was just going to, one example of Dr. Wolf mentioned work smarter, not harder. And one example of how we are, Harvey and I, Chris Adair and Chris Rose, are trying to visualize ways we can sort of compress work so that it is less than it used to be, change how we do our work, is look at more, you've seen this too, more general orders, fewer individual orders, so that we're bringing actually, literally, to your question earlier, fewer orders before the board, and we just then enroll dischargers into the general orders. We want to continue to push that envelope, though, and apply it into the MPDS program potentially and create an abundance of general orders and decrease the abundance of individual orders there, too. That's really kind of stretching the imagination, I think, of where regions have gone, though, before.
All right, so do you need anything?
from
I like us? Lisa's suggestion because, as I mentioned, Michael's got some presentations that we'll show you some.
So should we move to item 9?
Could we make a couple comments before we do that?
Sure.
Just so, because I'll lose them in my notes.
And then Mr. Shemek wants to address this, and anyone else in the public can also.
But there's more global comments. I'll keep them simple. But everything that Ken talked about, I kind of agree. But it just knocks me back when I hear about moving beneficial threat thresholds around inside a program, and that what was there before is now going to be eroded, and we'll accept something and raise the bar to where we're going to work on something to a higher level and not see those before. And I think that's a real slippery slope, because right now it's what you're talking about is inside a program, but soon you'll be talking about program versus program as to what's going to meet that threshold as to what gets our attention or what gets some work or what gets particular scope of work, because it's not meeting a threshold to where we can handle that or we don't have the resources anymore. And I think those type of erosions need to really be put out in front of people and have an opportunity to get annoyed about them and find out who we should pummel with our annoyance. And another example would be the use of GeoTracker. That's just a festering problem going on and on and on, and every time Steve shows up, should all seven of us be in Steve's face separately, giving him pushback on that and asking for help from the State Water Board. And the other just offhand comment I have kind of goes back now almost, 2 years, that I was amazed during the ag process that we didn't actually have the equivalent of a outreach, education, public affairs, or public information officer. And as you're some of the stuff you're talking about, in somebody's phrase of getting political and messy, I don't know that a person with I might be wrong, but my some of my interactions with staff and management, program managers, has been kind of as a lay person talking to somebody who knows 100 times more than about the subject matter than I do, but little missing things, just as simple as the my interpretation of filling out a form and doing it well versus somebody that is so close to the project and is a rocket science putting together the form, and the disconnect between how I would look at that form and filling it out accurately. And is there not a reason to look in the future to actually having that type of component at regional water board levels, a professional PIO that can carry the message inside and outside of the messy political realm that I think we're all all of life is going through. It may happen at the state level, but it's coming. These issues that you talk about are just going to get worse and worse and worse and more extreme as we move on. And it seems like the battles are eventually going to have to be fought in city council rooms and supervisor rooms and assembly places, that kind of thing. And if I don't necessarily think that this region has to wait for some other region to try it first or for a state water board to bless it, or there might be other ways through grants or creative thinking or a pilot project that could get supported and you could move to that way. So just a couple comments before I lose.
So to answer your question about an information officer, only one region has one. That's Region 4. And they had one originally. I don't know how they hired the person, but he passed away. And it was almost, the level of effort it took to get the state board to allow them to hire the next person, because we don't have that classification and we don't hire that person. It doesn't mean we can't do it. It just was extremely difficult to get Sacramento to allow them to do that. We can certainly look into it. It does mean, though, that means we're going to take a technical position and convert it to this other position, and we can have that. We can certainly have that discussion and come back to you with a recommendation. Your comment about problems festering, I think that's the whole reason I brought these topics up, is it seems to me, and I've only been here 14 months, but it does seem like a number of these problems, that's what they're doing. They're just festering. They're not getting solved. And the idea is to try to solve them long term so that we are putting less resources in them, and then ultimately we have resources to work on other things. It's not a matter of permanent diversion, for example, Salinas River. It's really solve the problem, make the permitting of the maintenance much more routine so staff doesn't have to spend so much time on an ongoing basis. So that's really the concept, and maybe I didn't articulate that well enough.
Bruce.
My overall comment is that it's an administrative task. It's for Ken and section department heads to pick up on initiatives that they think are important enough to increase their attention to and to adjust or drop performance measures or tasks that are getting done. That's overall my comment. And they probably have already done this, but I think if there was analysis of position by position where supervisors talked to their employees and found out what's taking up most of their time, and if supervisors were of the opinion that some of those time-taking matters really weren't that important, then that would maybe generate some ideas of, you know, stopping doing what we're some of the things we're doing so that those persons could be doing something else that's more important. And those couple of examples we had about the 401 on the Salinas River and the WDRs and Lisa's example about the reduction in industrial inspections for an increase in municipal attention, you know, those are all great suggestions. And maybe to address any discomfort board members might have, you know, as you make these decisions to pick up a program and you itemize what's not going to get done, that the board just be kept abreast with consent item informational reports, and that would be a good way to start out down that new direction if we go there.
You brought to mind one thing that I am going to solve, and I should alert you to this because it probably means more people will be coming to you asking you to do something because I didn't. And that has to do with local individuals who constantly, and I don't know how to say it any more politely, pester staff over issues that are either should be dealt with at the local level or that this board has already rendered a decision on or the staff have presented a position or an explanation for, and the people aren't happy with that, and they continue to call me, email staff. It's incredibly wasteful. It uses way too much staff time. So there's a recent case, and I'm not going to go into it now. You'll probably be getting a letter from this individual. Staff, the individual was complaining about contamination of wells up in Morro Bay and making claims on certain things. Staff did an analysis, took time, came and met with me. I concurred. I signed the letter. This individual was unhappy. They went to Sacramento, started writing Tom Howard and others about the fact that, and this person has no technical background or expertise yet. We had engineers and geologists looking at it, and they were disagreeing, saying that our analysis was faulty. Now, I understand that we have a responsibility to the public. We're a public agency, and we need to be responsive to the public. But we also have a fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers of the state to make sure that we use our resources effectively and efficiently. And constantly responding to individuals after a decision has been made or, you know, we've given them our opinion is not responsible. So in the future, what we're going to do is when we make a decision or, you know, or respond to these people once, we're going to go ahead and explain to them what their administrative processes are for appeal, because we're going to be done. We're done with it. I'm going to say staff don't respond anymore. We're done. That means then that the next step is they're going to come to you and say, well, Mr. Harris sent me a letter. I don't agree with it, or he refuses to answer my phone calls any longer. And you will then have to consider their request. And if you give me direction, of course, I will follow it. If you agree with us and say, no, we're done with this, their next step then is to take it to Sacramento. And that was articulated recently. Mr. Howard, in this particular case, laid those options out to this individual, and I in turn have now given them instructions on how to write to you and ask for you to consider the issue. So it's one, working smarter, but also recognizing where we're wasting resources and taking actions to correct that. But it does mean now that you are going to probably hear a lot more from individual public members.
Okay. Anything else on this item? Okay, Michael? Oh, yeah. Thank you. Mr. Shimek, besides Mr. Shimek, does anyone else wish to address the board on this topic? Okay.
Steve Shimek, the other project in Monterey.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. So my comments are about the specifics of the projects that are being chosen. With both Salinas River Channel Maintenance Project, I have 15 years of experience working with that. With the other one that came up, and I'll spend less time on that, is Morro Bay Sewage Treatment Plant. I have many years of experience with that issue before this board, actually. On the Salinas River Channel Maintenance Project, what I want to kind of frame for you is the idea of what responsibilities do you have right now. Right now, what it is, it's a 401 certification where a project comes to you, and you have to decide, or the staff has to decide, whether or not that project, you know, will have potential impacts on water quality and whether or not those are beneficial, move in the right direction or not. What has been suggested here is that this, you know, that is that the staff get involved in actually kind of constructing a solution for the Salinas River Channel Maintenance Project. That is a project that has undergone repeated litigation, not by us, but has decades of litigation around it. And it's not a problem of the agencies not talking to one another. This agency actually has done a terrific job of talking with NOAA Fisheries and some of the other agencies, and basically saying that the project as proposed was not certifiable, and from this agency they would not give a 401 cert, and NOAA Fisheries said that in fact the proposed project could cause jeopardy to endangered species. But it was a situation where actually the agency, many people felt that what the agency was actually trying to do was negotiate gridlock. In other words, it was actually aiming to get to that place where they could just throw up their hands and say, oh, we you know, it's too hard. And that's where we are right now, and both sides are lawyering up. Monterey County Water Resources Agency has, just at the last meeting, moved lots of budget to Downey Brand. And Monterey County Farm Bureau, along with the Channel Coalition, have hired an attorney, Lowry and something in Salinas. We have not engaged in an attorney on this particular issue. There are also people working towards a solution, towards solutions. Specifically, the Nature Conservancy is doing a great job, a woman by the name of Jennifer Berenger, and she's proposing some solutions. I am not at liberty to say, but that is not the phrase that as in a legal sense that I know, and but I'm about to sue or anything. We've talked to lawyers about it, but we have no intention of suing over this project at this time. But we are working towards solutions on this project. So the concept that where right now, where you have this 401 cert, and it's a fairly contained, you know, involvement, to wading into a 30-year problem, I would suggest to you that Salinas River Channel Maintenance Project is almost as big of a morass as the ag waiver itself. That's what you would be wading into, and I believe that. As far as Morro Bay Cayucas, and I'll wrap it up, Yes.
I'll give you another 30 seconds to
yeah.
wrap it up.
As far as Morro Bay Cayucas goes, again, I would suggest to you that it is a situation where it is being deliberately kind of maneuvered into a stalemate where the Coastal Commission said years ago that that site was not permittable, and yet they chose to ignore it, and you are in a – there's a, actually a settlement agreement between this agency and that Joint Powers Authority, and I think that there's been some talk about that settlement agreement that over the past year. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I do have a card from Mr. Edwards, and I see that he is gone, and I just wanted to alert the board. Did everyone get a copy of his letter or just me? Okay. Jeff Edwards. Yeah.
I don't believe so.
Okay. Yeah, you can make a copy and then just give it to us. And he just has some comments to make on the Los Osos management plan that has been released and wanted to weigh in on that. But we'll just have to read about it. Okay. Are we ready to move to the next item?